Believe It or Not. And with the jangling of camel bells comes the Caravan of Truth, featuring Robert L. Ripley and presented by that new taste sensation in breakfast cereals, Huskies, spelled H-U-S-K-I-E-S. The new whole wheat flakes with that different flavor. The favorite cereal of leading athletes in every sport. Yes, sir, at the training table, at the breakfast table, Huskies eat Huskies. And here's that nimble nonpareil of narrative, that never-failing notable of numberless nerve-wracking natural news nuggets. Believe it or not, Bob Ripley.
Oh, greetings, everybody.
Hey, Bob, wait a minute. Before you go one bit further, I want the answer to that believe it or not that you started last Friday night and didn't finish.
Yes?
The one about the barrel of dimes and the barrel of quarters.
Oh, so you've been worrying about that one, have you?
Yeah.
Well, which would you rather have, a barrel of dimes or a barrel of quarters?
Why, of course, Bob, I'll take the barrel of quarters.
Wrong, Fort. Wrong. A barrel of dimes equals $96,536. And a barrel of quarters equals only $87,975. Believe it or not.
Gosh, Bob, I lost over $8,000 on that guess. Well, I knew there was an Ethiopian in the woodpile.
Well, sure, Fort. Did you ever hear how the Ethiopian cheered up Queen Victoria?
No, Bob.
In 1861, after Queen Victoria lost her husband, she became very despondent and nothing could comfort her until one day she received a marriage proposal from King Theodore of Ethiopia, addressed her as High Queen, wide of figure and handsome of appearance. Although the old queen didn't like the wide figure part, she was so amused at Theodore's high, wide, and handsome that she smiled for the first time. Now, not to be outdone by any king of Ethiopia, B.A. Rolf, who is white, and the men about town who are high and handsome, will cheer us all up with a medley from High, Wide, and Handsome, O.K. the A. Let me tell you about the pauper pilot promising peculiar, prodigious, preponderous, prolific, and preposterous problem.
What in the world is that, Bob?
That is actually what King Ferdinand called Christopher Columbus, whose day we celebrate next Tuesday. When Columbus discovered America, he made an agreement with the Spanish king by which he was to receive 10% of everything produced in the New World. This agreement entitled him and his heirs and descendants to 10% of all the gold, jewels, pearls, minerals, and all other things that might be found in the Americas. Can you imagine what a huge sum that would be? It would amount to billions of dollars every year. But Columbus had such little faith in the future of this continent And he worried so much over the possibility that America might turn out to be a failure that he exchanged his rights to the 10% back to the government for the sum of $16,000 to be paid annually to the Columbus family. And this sum was paid to Columbus and his heirs every year since that time until last year. There are only two remaining descendants of Columbus living. At least I think they are still living. Their names are Don Cristobal Colon and Don Ramon Colon. And not only did the present Spanish government refuse to pay them the $16,000 a year, but last year they were thrown into prison in Madrid, and but for the intervention of the Pan-American Congress, they would have been executed, believe it or not. Now, my radio sketch tonight is about India. And when I was there 2 years ago, I visited the University of Lucknow and learned of the strange story of its endowment. And it is this story that I will sketch for you right now. 150 years ago, the university was about to close its doors because they had no money. Sir Claude Martin, treasurer of the university, had just been given this disastrous news. And as he walks home, he is desperately trying to think of some plan how to save the university. And completely lost in his thoughts, he wanders off into the native quarter where he had never been before, and suddenly he becomes aware of his unfamiliar surroundings.
Wow, it's curious. Huh? Has he never seen a cockfight before?
A cockfight?
Yes, sir. It is very interesting. Perhaps you would like to bet?
You may bet on the fight. Curious. What's that?
The cockfight is starting. Here, come this way so we may see it. I have bet 2 rupees on the black champion. See that black one? He is the one I have bet on.
He's a ferocious-looking fellow. Good heavens, how the feathers fly. Look, the other bird is down.
The black champion has won again, sir. What a fighter. 11 fights in succession today.
The owner must make a great deal of money.
He is very rich.
I'd like to meet him.
Come with me, sir.
Sahib, we are indeed honored by your presence.
Thank you. Would you care to sell your black champion rooster?
Sell him? Why, Sahib, I'd rather sell my own son. Why,
Where would I be able to buy one like him?
A champion like him? Well, Sahib, the nearest place would be the Nakash Chicken Market down the street. Count 3 stalls from the right and buy the first rooster, you see.
Thank you. I'll be back soon with my own champion and we'll arrange a real cockfight. Let me see, the third stall from the right.
A real cockfight. He says he will match my bird with a rooster from the Nakash Chicken Market.
It will be easy to persuade him to bet some money on his soup chicken. And I will pretend to help him when he returns.
It is a very funny plan.
Here we are. This bird's a nice fellow, eh? I bought the first one I saw on the third stall of the Nakash Market. Oh, there's the gong. I suppose we're ready to start.
Wait, sir. You have not put the steel spurs on him yet.
Steel spurs? I hadn't noticed that they wore them.
I will loan you these.
All right.
Here, you hold him while I strap them on.
Yes. I do hope he wins. I bet my last £20 on him against the black champion.
Indeed. £20 is quite a sum. There, the spurs are on. We are ready now. I will put him in the pit.
See, he's got him. My bird won. He's beaten the black champion.
He has killed the champion. It is a miracle. The bird is worth a fortune. The bird is worth a fortune.
Thank you.
And the bird was worth a fortune. This story is incredible, but absolutely true. Sir Claude Martin bought a rooster at an ordinary chicken market, only to find that it was the rarest breed of killer. Asaf Ud Daula, king of Ud and Nabob Bengal, who had seen the bird fight, paid $500,000 for it, and moreover, named Sir Claude Prime Minister of Bengal. And with this money, Sir Claude Martin endowed the University of Lucknow, which is now called the Mountaineer in his honor. He was Prime Minister of Bengal for 14 years, and when he died in 1800, he left a colossal fortune of $10 million, which he earned by scientific breeding of fighting cocks. Believe it or not. Now, contrary to popular belief, cowboys didn't originate in the West. The first cowboys were New Yorkers, operating a band of cattle thieves in Westchester County, New York, during the Revolutionary War. They called them cowboys because they had a preference for stealing cows. Nowadays, the only time cowboys get to New York is for the rodeo, which opened this week in Madison Square Garden. Now, B.A. Rolfe and his orchestra and the men about town are going to sketch a musical picture of a cowboy coming east and his homesick dreams of the far west. The song, Rolling Plains. Ride 'em, cowboy!
Don't the folks in New York ever smile? Oh, give me back my gun and the bronc I used to run and my gal. You're right, old pal. This town'll drive you loco. Twill make you lose your cocoa. Going crazy any second. Take it easy, stop and reckon. Old pal, you have to ride across those rolling plains, rolling plains, where the cattle are grazing and the sun is a blazing, blazing down with its beams. Rolling plains, with my kids all beside me. To guide me down the trail of my dreams.
Where's the moon riding high in the sky? Get along, get along.
Tell my love, very soon I'll be by her side to ride and ride the road
in plain. Where I'll meet friendly faces from the wide open spaces
on those rolling
thank you.
we have an old friend here with us tonight. He's a member of those world champion New York Yankees, which today lead the New York Giants 3-1 in their battle for the World Series title. Just this afternoon, by hitting a home run in the ninth inning, he passed Babe Ruth, establishing a new record of 34 runs driven in World Series competition. And here he is, Larrapin Lou Gehrig, star first baseman of the New York Yanks, the Iron Man of Baseball.
Right from the ballpark to the microphone. I'm glad to see you, and congratulations on that home run.
Thanks, Bob, and I'm glad to see you.
Say, Lou, with the way the series is shaping up now, do you think there's any chance it'll go 7 full games?
Well, Ford, those Giants are a fighting club, but if we can have Gomez in the box for us tomorrow, I think we'll win that championship.
With Lefty Gomez on the mound and you and the rest of that murderer's row in there slugging, the Giants have their work cut out for them. But say, Lou, switching from baseball to another topic for the moment, I understand that your manager, Christy Walsh, has arranged with Saul Lesser, the movie producer, for you to star in a picture in Hollywood. Is that right?
Half right, Ford. I'm going to have a pretty good role, I guess. But as for being a star, that's another thing. It's pretty tough to make the big leagues in Hollywood.
Well, Lou, if you play in as many movies as you have baseball games, you'll be a star, all right. And you can keep in shape out there, too, if you'll start off the day by diving into a big bowl of Huskies.
That's a real load off my mind, Ford. Because, seriously, I do go for Huskies in a big way. They're the best-tasting cereal I ever ate, and I guess I've tried them all.
Well, thanks, Lou, and good luck to you. Friends, you just heard Iron Man Lou Gehrig tell you how he goes for Huskies, the new whole wheat flakes with that new and different flavor. Well, Lou is the only one of scores of great athletes who say, Huskies are tough. So why don't you take the advice of these star athletes in all fields of sport and try Huskies yourself? You'll like their new and different flavor, and you'll find that Huskies are rich in food energy and help build bone and muscle, too. Ladies and gentlemen, let me present the Honorary Director General of the Texas and Pan American Exposition, Hot Bob Ripley.
Thank you, Bob. Well, that's right, that's why I'm taking you down to the Lone Star State for my next radio sketch. It's the 9th of April, 1934, Huntsville, Texas. Raymond Hamilton, one of the country's most desperate killers, has been convicted and is awaiting sentence for the murder of Major Croson, a prison guard. Hamilton is seated next to the press table. Harry McCormick, a reporter, is leaning over, whispering to the convicted Raymond.
Well, Hamilton, it doesn't look so good for you, boy.
Never can tell, Mac. Judge might have a soft spot. He's coming in now.
Order in the court. The accused to the bar.
Raymond Hamilton, you've been found guilty of murder in the first degree. The court hereby sentences you, Raymond Hamilton, to die in the electric chair.
Oh, Mac, I'm elected.
That sure is tough, Ray.
Mac, you're a great reporter. You've given me a swell break in all the stories. I'm going to get out of this death house, and when I escape, I'm going to give you the swellest exclusive story you've ever had.
Well, kid, you picked the toughest death house in the country to crash out of. If you can do that, you'll be pulling the impossible.
That's my meat, Mac. The impossible. Tony's got the ladder over that wall. The outside waiting for us. Okay, fellas, let's make a run for it.
Okay, Ray, let's go.
It's a break!
Gentlemen, Ray Hamilton made good his boast and escaped from that death house. Several months later, still at large and hunted by the police, Hamilton kept his promise with Harry McCormick, who printed an exclusive interview with the escaped man. Mr. McCormick has come all the way from Texas to tell us how he got that interview. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Harry McCormick. Mr. McCormick, how did you get in touch with Hamilton to get that interview?
I established contact with Hamilton through the underworld and went out to see him. He wanted me to write his story, but insisted that he see it before I had it printed.
I see. You were working for two editors then, huh?
I sure was. I brought my story back to Hamilton, and he liked it. But I was in a spot.
What was the trouble?
Well, I couldn't let it out that I had known the whereabouts of Hamilton without notifying the police. So I pretended that I was kidnapped. Yes. Hamilton put his fingerprints on my car. Mm-hmm. Then they tied me up with chicken wire. Yes. It all looked like a genuine snatch.
Have you ever told anybody about this before?
No, Mr. Ripley, this is the first time I've told this story anywhere. Everybody up until now believed that I had been really kidnapped.
That was a very dangerous business, wasn't it?
I was afraid of the cops making a sudden pinch while I was interviewing Hamilton. About 2 weeks before, I had seen the bodies of Hamilton's pals. They were riddled with bullets. Those Texas cops don't fool, Mr. Ripley. They shoot on sight.
I see. Mr. McCormick, aren't you liable by this confession of yours to sentence under the Federal Act, harboring a criminal?
I was liable, Mr. Ripley, but as you know, about a month later, Hamilton was captured and executed in the electric chair.
Well, thanks very much for coming here, Harry McCormick. Ladies and gentlemen, Raymond Hamilton, convicted killer, kept his promise he made at that day of his sentence and broke out of one of the toughest prisons in the country and gave an exclusive interview to Harry McCormick, who has come all the way from Texas to here tonight to tell the world for the first time how he braved death to get that interview, believe it or not. Some 20 years ago, a broken arm, I broke it in the ball game, put an end to my baseball career, so I took up the next best thing, cartooning. And with a roll of drawings under my arm, I went to the office of the old New York Globe and asked for a job, and I got it, fortunately. But the first man I met in that newspaper office was Sid Mercer. He is today one of the most widely read of all baseball writers, and he's been my friend since that day. I've invited him here tonight to meet our next, believe it or not, Sid Mercer. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Miss May Arbo, the Iron Woman of baseball.
Thank you.
Lou, come over here. I want you to meet the Iron Man of baseball to meet the Iron Woman of baseball.
Thank you, Mr. Ripley. Good evening, everybody.
Bob, at the end of this season, Lou Gehrig had played 1,965 consecutive games of baseball in 12 years. You call Miss Arbaugh the Iron Woman of baseball. Why?
Well, she was the greatest of all woman ball players. Some of the fans may remember her under the name of Carrie Nation, captain of the famous Boston Bloomer Girls. And Sid, listen, during the 33 years of her active career, she traveled over 400,000 miles, played in 6,486 games with a lifetime batting average of .370. And that's some record for a bloomer, though.
Well, Bob, I've got a record in bloomers myself.
Me, Lou, but all is forgiven. Forget that.
Lou, I think Miss Arbaugh plays your position.
At first base? I thought you were a pitcher.
As a pitcher, I'd make a good dishwasher. And first base is a soft racket. You ought to know.
Now, come on, Carrie Nation. That first base is the hot corner. Are you a good hitter?
I was never in your class. The only home run I ever made was downhill. But I hit the longest baseball in baseball history.
How far did you sock it?
The ball went 2,000 miles. While playing in Chicago, I hit a line drive right into a freight train. That ball went to Colorado.
Ow. I asked for that one.
Well, don't worry, Lou. Just 20 more years and you'll be up to Miss Arbaugh's record. And thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we've just presented Miss May Arbaugh, who has played more baseball than any other player, man or woman, in the history of the game.
believe it or not.
Hold on, Mr. Ripley.
Yes?
One thing you left out. I want to say, I won't say how many years ago.
I hope you won't.
But you pitched a game against me in Santa Rosa, California.
Santa Rosa, my old hometown, but I knew you'd bring that up. I'm sorry. But
don't forget, I got 2 hits off of you. Believe that or not.
Well, that's why when it's a newspaper work. And again, I thank you all, Miss Arbo, Lou Gehrig, and Sid Mercer for being with us tonight, believe it or not.
Series still hangs in the balance between the champions of the American and National League. The score now stands Yankees 3, Giants 1. And in both leagues today, you'll find Huskies, the new whole wheat flakes, winning the pennant at the breakfast table and at the training table. On the Yankees, Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, Monty Pearson, Jake Powell, and Red Rolfe. On the Giants, manager Bill Terry, Harry Gumbert, and Jimmy Ripple. One and all, they say, dish me up a bowl of Huskies every time. So friends, take a tip from these star athletes and try Huskies yourself. You'll like the new and different flavor toasted into those crisp, crunchy whole wheat flakes. And you'll find that Huskies are rich in food energy and help build bone and muscle, too. What's more, Huskies are the biggest value in whole wheat flakes your grocer can give you. So try Huskies, H-U-S-K-I-E-S, in the big 10-ounce box first chance you get. Join the Huskies who eat Huskies. And now, here's a special announcement. Jack Haley, the comedy star of the movie Wake Up and Live, goes on the air over most of these stations immediately following this program with the first broadcast of his new comedy show. With Jack Haley, you'll hear Wendy Berry, Virginia Verrill, and Ted Fiorito's band. So keep your dials tuned in for Jack Haley. Bob.
Yes?
How about another problem, believe it or not?
Okay, all right, if you like. You know, what city is so large that an airplane flying at the rate of 200 miles an hour will require 7 hours to fly from one end to the other?
Oh, Bob, you can't tell me that any city is so large that it would take an airplane going 200 miles an hour 7 hours to fly from one end to the other.
I do, and think it over, Ford, and if you can't figure it out, I'll give you the answer next Saturday night. When Columbus made his great search for a new world, he expected to find the king of Japan in America. So that he could identify himself to the Japanese king, Queen Isabella gave him a passport dated Granada, April 13, 1492, to present to the king of Japan or any other king that he might meet on the way. And on behalf of the makers of Huskies and myself, let me quote to you the concluding sentence of that historical passport. And may divine providence open to you the door to grace, good health, perfect prosperity, and comfort of the soul.
Attention, folks. In just a few seconds, you'll hear over most of these stations the opening broadcast of Hollywood's newest comedy star, that lively, laudable, lovely lunacy of laughter, Jack Haley. So keep tuned in. This is the National Broadcasting Company.